Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Voyager actor, who in 1999 portrayed the character of Police Chief Joe Frawley in a season 3 episode of the TV series Early Edition, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, your favorite forever ensign, Garrett Wong. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/the Delta Flyers.
Yes, patrons. Yes, patrons.
Tell me about Police Chief Frawley.
Oh my gosh. So when was that? 99?
You're a little young to play the police chief at that point.
99. I mean, I was in my 30s. Well, here's the thing. So Early Edition was Kyle Chandler's big number one series lead, CBS show. That's sort of what put him on the map. I had worked with Kyle on Early Edition and knew Kyle a bit from that show and some mutual friends. Mm-hmm. But Early Edition, it was at the end of maybe our season 4, something like that.
Mm-hmm. You filmed in LA, right?
No, went off to Chicago. Show shot in Chicago.
Okay.
And I remember because I knew Kyle and he was a motorcycle rider like me.
Like you, yes.
And when I got to Chicago, I had a bunch of days off and I was talking to Kyle and he said, hey, if you want to take my bike and go, have fun because I'm working and I'm not going to ride. And I remember I borrowed his bike in Chicago. I didn't know Chicago at all. And I just headed up the Lakeshore Drive.
Love it.
And just like took off and like rode his bike and it was awesome. It was really fun.
What month was this though in Chicago?
It was April.
Oh, okay.
It was because we had just finished.
Yeah.
It was still a little chilly, but yeah. I remember that's my memory of doing that show. I don't remember the story of what I did in the show.
Yeah.
But I remember being in Chicago. I didn't know the city very well. And Kyle giving me his motorcycle. And for like 3 days I had his bike and kept it at the hotel and would go out and just poke around. It was really, really fun.
But don't you think you were fairly young to be a police chief, though? I mean, police chief, I think of guys in their 60s, and you were not.
Well, I think the story, what I remember, was Kyle Chandler's character goes back to his small town.
Okay.
And I played a character who was like the football captain. I was the big winner guy.
Yeah.
But when he comes back to the small town, I'm still in the small town.
And he's the big fish, isn't he?
Yeah. And he's, and so there was a whole jealousy, competitive thing with Kyle Chandler and my character or something. That's all I remember.
Okay. So the conflict was there. Okay.
Yeah. There was some conflict there. Yeah.
So that's pretty cool that he let you borrow his bike. So did you borrow his helmet? Did you borrow his jacket as well? You didn't bring your riding anything, correct?
No.
So you had everything from him. Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Very cool.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So this week's episode, Robbie, is Lifeline. Lifeline. Mm. So is this, does this ring a bell for you? Because it does not ring a bell for me at this point at all.
Lifeline.
Just from the title. I can't get anything.
The title sounds familiar, but we should go watch it. Let's go watch it.
We should go watch it. So let's go watch Lifeline.
Lifeline. And for all our Patreon patrons, stick around for your bonus material. For everyone else, we'll see you after we watch it.
See ya. All right, we're back from watching Lifeline.
Yes, we are. What a different episode this was.
I had no clue, first of all, that Robert Picardo has a writing credit in this episode. My gosh. And then I did further research. There's only two Star Trek series regulars who've had writing credits. Do you know who the other one is?
I thought Ethan Phillips sold a story. I think he sold a story on our show. Same as Bob. Like, I think Bob and John Bruno, who's his friend and also directed on our show and a visual effects master.
Yeah.
Bob and John Bruno were good friends and they were talking. And I think they came up with a story in their conversations and together. And then they went and officially pitched it, wrote it out and pitched the story. I think Ethan Phillips sold a story, although I don't know if it got made or not.
No, that is not the correct answer. Walter Koenig.
What?
Yeah.
What did he sell? What did he write on?
For
the original
Star Trek
series?
No, for Star Trek, the animated series.
Oh, wow.
He has a writing credit for that. So,
wow.
Still very impressive. Any actor getting a writing credit. Mm-hmm. You know, we hear of actors directing all the time, such as yourself and Bob and Roxanne mm-hmm. and Tim. But in terms of writing, you don't see that.
No, not often. Yeah. Not often at all. Okay. So Bob Picardo, John Bruno sold a story.
Yes.
And then it was written by Brannon Braga.
Doherty.
Robert Doherty.
My favorite writer so far.
Yes.
Other than Brian.
Raph Green.
And Raph Green, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Those three wrote it. Terry Wendell directed this episode, which he didn't direct a lot, maybe four or five episodes for us. Let's do our poetry synopsis first, then we'll get into our cast.
Sure.
Let's synopsize this.
My haiku for Lifeline. Mm-hmm. Starfleet transmission. Doctor sent to Jupiter. Chip off the old block.
Nice.
Very abstract, but you know.
I like it.
That's haiku for you. All right, okay. Let's hear this. I cannot wait to hear your limerick.
Here's a limerick poetry synopsis for the entire episode. Lifeline. Here we go.
Okay, go.
We're going to get this in a limerick. Here we go.
Yeah.
The Pathfinder project's still there. It sends lots of messages to share. Doc's inventor is ill with a personality that's quite shrill. Rude and grumpy are a family affair.
You got shrill in there? Wow.
I do. Yeah.
Oh, very, very creative.
But we both had the same idea that
very on point.
His inventor, Zimmerman, and the doctor had the same personality.
Pretty much.
Rude and grumpy are a family affair.
There you go. I love it. Yeah.
Okay. Guest stars. Dwight Schultz playing Barkley back again. Love Dwight Schultz. We've talked about him before. Everybody knows him, loves him. I don't know if we've ever talked about his first job, so I wanted to make sure we covered that.
Okay.
It was a TV movie. I think it was a TV movie. It might have been a feature film, but it was in 1981, and it was called Thin Ice with Kate Jackson. Kate Jackson was the star.
From Charlie's Angels?
Yeah.
My goodness.
Oh. That's why I think it was a TV movie. I couldn't figure that out. But
Thin Ice.
Thin Ice. What? But Dwight Schultz did a lot of theater before that. He had won some Dramalog Awards. He had done a lot of theater, so he came out of the theater and made his film debut in 1981, not long before the A-Team. That wasn't...
Yeah, arguably that's his most well-known credit, I think. Yeah. At least that's what I know him from, growing up, watching the A-Team, and the character he played was very quirky and very Barkley-esque, I might add, if you think about that.
Yes, and very... He just was charming and he popped on the A-Team. I mean, you know, the A-Team was filled with lots of big characters and great, great personalities. But Dwight on the A-Team was pretty special. He was awesome.
He was unique. He was definitely, he played a character that could be on the spectrum, really. And a very good character as well. Mm-hmm. One that's very memorable. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Star Trek was able to have him guest star as many times as he did is actually a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm. We have the character of Haley, the assistant to Zimmerman.
Yeah.
Was played by Tamara Craig Thomas, is her name.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to ask you right off the bat before you go into her first thing. When she came on screen, who did she remind you of?
I don't know.
And you may
Jennifer
not.
Lean or
No. You may not know this answer right off the bat because you may not know this actress's work that I'm thinking of. But. Maya Hawke, Ethan Hawke's daughter. So
she does from Stranger Things.
Yes, the overall look of this actress that played Haley, even her voice has that little bit of a raspiness to it. It very similar to Maya Hawke also. So yes. I immediately that was my connection. Okay, what's her first? What is her first?
Tamara Craig Thomas, she's Canadian. Her first job that I could find was a horror film in 1996 called Tromeo and Juliet. Now,
this is probably with Troma Films.
It was Troma Films. They were very famous for these low budget genre horror films.
Yes.
The writer of Tromeo and Juliet
is who?
Is James Gunn. The Guardians of the Galaxy writer, director, like James Gunn wrote this movie,
Tromeo
and Juliet, 1996.
He cut his teeth with trauma. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's funny, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I've been to a few conventions where trauma, or at least, you know, the people, the team behind trauma has a booth, basically, at a few of the conventions I've been at. Yeah. So, wow. I did not know that.
Okay. Yeah. That was her first 96. So just a few years before, I think she's now become a producer. I think she's returned to Canada. She produces a lot of Canadian content up there.
Documentaries is what I found. So,
oh, wow.
Interesting. Yes. And also she changed her last name to Watson now. So,
married name or
I that's what I'm thinking. That makes sense, but it's still a three name. It's one of the, like you, Robert Duncan McNeil, she still maintains a middle name as well. So, but again, I don't remember her at all because I had no scenes with her. So, okay.
We didn't have a lot to do in this episode.
No.
Most of the cast. Not much to do. Two more guest stars. Jack Shearer plays Hayes.
Yeah, we've seen him before.
We've seen him before. His first TV job was in 1983. The Fall Guy with Lee Majors.
Oh, my goodness. I remember that show. Yes. Yeah.
And last but not least, Marina Sirtis, our special guest star as Deanna Troi. So fun to see her. I remember she had done an episode of our show, but I couldn't remember which one. But so this was it. Her first job was in England, where she's from.
Yes.
A TV show called Raffles, 1977. Raffles was a jewel thief who steals from the rich and has fun along the way and solves some mysteries and things like that. So Raffles, the jewel thief.
So he's kind of a Robin Hood-ish type of.
Yeah, I think it was something like that. She was a guest star on 1977, Raffles, the British TV.
You were 13, is that right?
I was 13.
Yeah, you were 13. And
I did my first community theater play.
Then, right?
Around the time she premiered on Raffles.
In Raffles.
Yeah, I think so. 1976, 77. 77 probably was, spring of 77 was Wizard of Oz. My first appearance on stage. And Marina Sirtis's first appearance on TV.
Raffles. It coincided.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
That's funny.
I also want to say there's another person in here who played the alien masseuse.
Oh, yeah. Who really turns out to be the doctor.
Right. Yeah. So that alien is an alien from Insurrection. Which, again, I will say is one of the two worst Star Trek movies, Next Generation movies. And she is actually the same young lady who was Jerry Ryan's photo double.
Oh, really?
So that's Nicole. Yeah. So if you recall, Nicole. Because I passed her in that alien makeup and I didn't say hello because I didn't know who it was. And she was like, Garrett. I'm like, who? And she's like, it's Nicole. I'm like, hi.
Oh,
I didn't
know
you were working today. And you know, all that craziness.
That was a crazy makeup. That was a big makeup.
Yeah. So that's Nicole. I just want to give her props because.
That was a nice bit.
She had a bit
to do and a lot of time in the makeup chair.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All righty.
Okay. So
we have everyone.
Yeah. That's everybody. Let's get into our recap of this episode.
Yeah. It starts with a exterior space shot of Jupiter Station. And we see a shuttle that's heading there, and we later learn that's Reg Barclay's shuttle. Mm-hmm. But here's the interesting note. There has been comments about the Jupiter Station in multiple Star Trek series, including ourselves, TNG, and yet there has never been a shot of Jupiter Station.
Oh, really? This is the first time we've ever seen it?
Yes, there's reference to it in multiple shows, but this is the first time we see it on Voyager.
Wow.
So that's, you know, that's a little special.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well,
and it looked cool. I like the look.
It looks super cool. Inside the shuttle that's heading to the space station, there's Reginald Barclay. We see him. He's approaching. He hails them, asks for permission to board, to dock. Mm-hmm. I just love Dwight Schultz's dry, his eyes. It's just such a permission. It's so formal yet funny to me. He just makes the simplest thing funny. I was laughing.
Oh, you're right.
At him.
He's the best.
Yeah.
He really is. But again, he has so much cachet from A-Team that you almost you're feeling, you're laughing with him because of that as well.
Because of his whole work history. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. We cut inside a lab and we're sort of panning across the lab. We hear the doctor's voice. It sounds like the doctor's voice, Bob Picardo's voice.
Right.
But something's different about it. He's kind of grumpy. He's like, come in.
Yeah.
It pans across the lab and we see an iguana. on the station just randomly. I was like, why? What is this iguana?
Was this John Bruno's idea or Bob's idea to put an iguana in this episode? I don't know. Maybe this is Bob Picardo's favorite reptile.
Likes Bob Picardo had a desert tortoise. It was
okay.
When his kids were young, they had fostered because you can't own a desert tortoise. They're very big. They're big. Oh. They're like, and they live 200 years, these tortoises.
I don't remember him having that. Had one.
Yeah. Oh. They're an endangered species, tortoise. And so they applied to the state of California as a family to foster one. And they had one in their backyard, just roamed around, this desert tortoise.
What?
Yeah.
Where is that tortoise now?
I don't know, Bob. But
I don't see the only pet I remember, and I've talked about this before, is their cat, Harry, which was probably the largest cat I've ever seen. It looked like a 45, 50, 60 pound cat. It was massive. But other than that, I don't
They had a the desert tortoise.
Was I don't it remember big its when name. You did you see
yeah,
it?
It was pretty big. Yeah.
Oh, it was
yeah.
it was big already. Okay. Yeah. So it wasn't a baby. Okay.
I think it was like a 40-year-old tortoise, but they lived to like 100, 200 years old or something. It was going to, outlive Bob and all of them, probably.
You call the name they gave the tortoise?
I don't. I wish I could.
Oh,
but I wonder if having a tortoise was an inspiration for him saying, well, Zimmerman should have a weird pet, too.
Can you do me a favor? Can you please just text him right now and say, what was the name of your desert tortoise? I'm just curious. I just really, really, really am curious. And I'm curious for silly things like this. That's just me. He answers, we can come back to that as, when you get the response.
Let's see if we get a response here.
Yeah, because that to me is important information.
Yes.
That is my forte, is literally knowing little trivia facts that
little stuff really, like that.
Yeah, little things like that, which amount to pretty much nothing, but I still enjoy trivia.
Okay. But we'll see. So this lab, we realize, it's as the camera pans over, we hear Bob Picardo's voice, and then we see him turn in a chair. It's Bob, but he's dressed in like gray hair and
civilian clothes. He doesn't have a uniform on. No,
it's not the doctor. It's clearly his inventor or something, you assume at this point. It is Dr. Zimmerman.
Yes.
He's the inventor of the EMH.
The father of holography, I guess. Yes. I think they talk about that. And his first name is Lewis. That's Lewis Zimmerman
Zimmerman. He's there. He talks to Barkley about the Pathfinder project. He's still searching, that Barkley is still searching for Voyager.
Has that funny line beforehand because he guesses the name of Voyager is it Pioneer? No, Voyager. And Barkley corrects him.
I do have the answer to the desert tortoise name.
Ah!
Robert Picardo's desert tortoise was named Tilly the tortoise.
What?
Yes.
Tilly. No.
You're
kidding me.
That's what he says. Tilly the
tortoise.
Tilly. Yes.
That's the name of the character from Discovery, Tilly. So I'm really shocked because that's it's not a common name.
Unusual name. Yeah.
It's a very unusual name. My goodness. Did
Tilly.
Robert Picardo breathe or speak existence so that.
Maybe he wrote Discovery as well. He created that and used his tortoise name. Okay, they're talking about the Pathfinder project. Barkley says they're on the verge of a breakthrough. Zimmerman is super grumpy.
Yes, he is.
And then they start talking about Zimmerman's health and how he's been prodded and poked and they haven't found anything. And he does say something like, you know, time is a luxury that I can't afford, Barkley, or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, the end of the scene ends with him saying, I'm dying. And so we're a little shocked by that. We're like, oh, okay.
Zimmerman's dying.
He's dying.
We have an Earth shot here.
Yeah.
We see, we go cut out to space after that. We have an Earth shot and then it pans across. We have a probe shot. We see the Pathfinder probe.
Did you like this shot?
No. Yes or... No, because
it's so funny because every time I watch things, I go, I wonder if Robbie likes this or not. No. And here we go.
Well, so, it wasn't clear what the shot was saying. It felt near Earth, we pan over and we see, or we dissolve to a Pathfinder probe, I assume.
Yeah. I think it's the Midas Array, is what I think it is.
So, okay, the Midas Array.
Yeah.
And then it pans off the Midas Array and suddenly Voyager flies by. And I'm like, wait, that to me, that shot is saying that Voyager's right near Earth. If all these shots are connected, it didn't make sense to me.
It didn't make sense to you. It did make sense to me because it went Earth and then pan away. And then it went either Midas Array or Pathfinder Midas Project.
Whatever that was.
Radar, whatever that is. And then it went to some nebulas.
Yes. Okay? And there's
then it went a little bit further. Yeah. A little blinking and a little bit further. So I understood, to me, it played as, hey, we're going from Earth all the way to the Delta Quadrant in an abbreviated Cliff Notes way. Okay, so I know you don't buy it, but I bought it and I was like, I'm fine with that, and I knew that you would not be fine with that
because it doesn't make sense because a camera could not see Earth and Voyager at the same time, and that's kind of what that little shot suggested is that we can pan from Earth, you know. Now if it had dissolved and dissolved and dissolved, like we're traveling through light years or something, I don't know.
There needed to be more dissolves. They needed to be more dissolves. Okay.
I agree.
All right, let's keep going.
But we see Voyager fly by. We cut into Astrometrics. Seven's working away at a side console, and suddenly there's an alert.
Yeah.
And she steps over to a center console, pulls up some data, and up on the screen in Astrometric pops all of these kind of fritzy data streams. We see Earth. We see Starfleet stuff. So it's clearly... Yeah.
It's a transmission from Starfleet.
Transmission.
But it's not a comm link. Yeah. She tries to... She hails the bridge. Janeway says, patch it through here. And she says, no, it's not a comm link, Captain. But it is a compressed data stream, badly, badly degraded. So now we know. And Janeway, everyone on the bridge is like, what? So Janeway's ready to head down to Astrometrics to check it out.
Yeah, because Seven calls, Janeway's got to go to Astrometrics. That's
right.
That's the game we play.
It is. We have an exterior space shot of Voyager flying through space, and then we cut to the briefing.
Now,
room.
When we're in space, let's stop. Pause at the space
I'll
shot.
I'll pause at the space shot. Go.
It is the most extra dramatic music I've ever heard on our show. It's like, because it feels like this music of the space shot and us flying by is like, we've won. We're going to get home in this episode. It's like the music you play at the end, the victory music. It just felt like, wow, is this extra? This is a little extra.
I had no problem with that. So I know that you didn't like it.
It felt a little extra to me.
Okay, fine. All right. So now we're in the briefing room. So evidently, Janeway's already been down to Astrometrics because Seven, when she calls, Janeway runs. And now they've moved the whole meeting into the briefing room.
Yes.
And we find
everybody's there.
All the main players are there, all the main heroes. And we discover that by using the Midas Array, once a month, we will receive a short burst of information and we will have basically 17 hours to respond. So this is a monthly thing. Once a month, this is going to happen. And everyone's pretty excited about this. And Janeway's like, okay, I'm going to give everyone a chance to answer, but they have to be very, very short answers because the data stream can't carry much information. We can't have people, you know, writing novels. But still, people are excited. Any comments from you about the briefing room?
I liked that Janeway said, look, you know, when you're writing your letters, Barkley and the Pathfinder Project people have not given up on us. And maybe say thank you.
Yeah.
Like that's, I like that little detail. Like that, this is really significant. And, you know, I just like that. So that's
A message of gratitude.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we're in sick bay.
Yes, we are.
And Neelix arrives with the mail for the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor starts reading through this, and essentially it's a message from Barclay telling the doctor, or informing the doctor, of Zimmerman's failing health. Yeah. And now this lights a fire under the doctor's bum. He is so intent on, you know, doing something at this point. We are now having, we come back from commercial break, and we're back in the sick bay. There is a passage of time. The doctor is now in his office on his big laptop.
Yes, reviewing the giant laptops that we used to have.
Yes.
It seems so modern in the 90s.
But they now, did seem modern, but no. Yeah. They you know what they remind me of? They remind me of if we were watching the Flintstones, and the Flintstones had laptops. That's what I think it looks like. So the doctor is in his office on his big laptop reviewing Zimmerman's medical data. At this point, Seven arrives with a pad containing information that he requested. And we find out that this information basically has Borg regeneration techniques. And this is the angle that he's going to take to heal Zimmerman, who at this point is unhealable by anybody in the Alpha Quadrant. So, you know, the doctor feels like my specialized knowledge is going to make the difference.
Yeah. He also makes a comment about how Zimmerman looks, how handsome he is, and how his looks are very inspiring. And
They inspire confidence, right?
Yes. Yes. His jawline is strong and inspires confidence. Like, he can relate to that. He's very proud that he looks, you know, he's got to say that Zimmerman's very handsome, just like him. It was a fun little exit comment.
Yeah, there's no humility with either Zimmerman or the doctor whatsoever. Okay, so we have an exterior space shot of Voyager, and then we go to the captain's ready room.
Yeah, so the doctor comes in. He's telling the captain about different kinds of Borg regeneration techniques that he could use to stop this, you know, this cell damage that's happening, maybe even cure him completely.
Yeah.
But he tells the captain that he wants to go back to the Alpha Quadrant to administer this treatment himself.
She's quite reluctant in the beginning because she says, to send you, we could not send any other messages back home. It would just be pretty much you. And the doctor is pleading, saying, look, can't everyone just wait for a month? And then she says, well, you have your duties in sick bay. And that's when she says, Paris can take it over. He knows everything, pretty much. He can do anything.
Well, he even says, Tom's already agreed to
Her next thing was like, well, only if he agrees. He's already agreed. I already asked him. So
yeah, I already asked him. It's covered.
Yeah. What a swell guy you are. You're going to take over all the duties for the doctor while he's gone.
Yeah. She's also pouring coffee here out of a coffee pot I don't know that I've seen before, but it was quite nice. It was
a new pot?
Sort of a silver pot. I don't know that I'd seen it, but she had a nice coffee setup. I just want to comment on that. It was, it was nice.
And that's it? Just saying it's a nice coffee setup?
It was a nice coffee setup.
Did you think about putting that into your limerick?
It's very sleek looking. Well, I have a coffee mug in real life called the Ember mug, and it charges.
Your mug has a name?
Yeah.
I love it.
It's a brand of battery operated mugs that you sit it on a little you know, charger.
Yeah.
And it charges the battery, and then when you pour your coffee, it keeps your coffee warm. And it's a very I love the design of my Ember coffee mug.
Okay.
When I saw her coffee pot and her mug and stuff, I was like, oh, that's like an Ember coffee pot. It probably keeps it hot, a very sci-fi, you know.
Yeah.
So it doesn't get cold in the pot. I just liked the design of her pot and her stuff. It reminded me of my Ember. So
I like that.
That's nice.
Yeah. Okay. And you just did a pitch for them. You just advertised.
I did. I think Ember, highly recommend the Ember brand of coffee mugs.
I think Ember owes you commission now.
I think they
do. So put in the code when you order your Ember, Paris told me so. And then hopefully they'll be able to give me something. You know, we'll see.
The doctor is pleading. He's still pleading.
Yeah.
She said, I did like when she said, well, Zimmerman created thousands of holograms. Like, you're not the only one. And, you know, you can hardly, you know, consider him your father. You know, he created lots of programs.
I think in this episode, they give us a number. Don't they give us a number of how many Mark ones? Okay. At some point.
I can't remember right off the top of my head.
All right. It was either 600 or 6,000.
Yeah.
I feel like
it was in the hundreds. I feel like it's
678, something like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
But there's an emotional plea here where the doctor basically says he's the closest thing. Like, to me, you may not think of him as my father, but I do.
Right.
And at the end of the scene, Janeway says, well, tell him Jane says hello. That's what he used to call me, and it bugged me, but he kept calling me Jane.
At the conference where she met him at.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. Okay. And then we go back to sick bay.
Then we go back to sick bay. And now the doctor is back in his office. He's working on his enormous, ginormous laptop, and he is humming a tune. Mm-hmm. And while he's humming the tune, he's got the melody going. All of a sudden, his voice goes, it just disappears. His singing voice is gone. He comes out into the main part of sick bay, and Seven is there. She's working on removing all non-essential subroutines because guess what? His program is way too large to send back to the Alpha Quadrant. And so he asks how much information needs to be deleted. And she says 12 megaquads must be left behind. And then, of course, there's a very humorous interchange where they start listing all the things that he can do.
Chess or singing or what about lovemaking?
Yeah, sexual activities. How about that? He's like, will you be reciting poetry when you get there? He's like, no. So, yeah, a lot gets taken out.
I like his line where he says, I don't want to look like every other EMH on the block. That was a nice little comment.
There's some good lines in here for sure.
But he thinks Zimmerman is going to be so excited
to meet him
and see what he learned and
how he's going to
inspire Zimmerman. He's got this fantasy of this reunion with his father figure.
Of making his father proud.
Yeah.
That's what he wants to do. That's his goal, his objective as an actor, as a character. So we're in Astrometrics and we have Janeway, Seven, and Harry, who are basically sending the doctor on his way to the Alpha Quadrant from Astrometrics. And I do remember filming the scene, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Because I was like, this is awesome. I get to take off his... And I played it as if like I was a little annoyed because I wanted to get my message back to my parents. And then he took all the data stream up. So I was just like, I was so happy to take it. I was like, you know, take your mobile meter off and take that. Yeah. Because my one line was... try not to get lost. Like it was a very just unenthused performance by me because I remember trying to, you know, give it to him a little bit for taking away that data stream.
Nobody gets messages.
Nope, not this month.
Then we are in some quarters. We go from his disappearance in Astrometrics. Suddenly we see a salad in the foreground.
Well, and Wendell is shooting from inside the replicator. Right. So the angle is from the inside is when you see the fly land on it. So that's a cool shot, at least. Right.
It was cool. And you see some quarters in the background, but you see the salad and suddenly there's a fly on the salad.
Right.
And it's shooed away by Haley, who we learn is Zimmerman's assistant.
That's right. But she speaks to the fly.
Yes.
Yeah. She's like, you can't land there again, whatever she says. And that's
something
just
like,
confused.
I told you to stay away from it.
Yeah.
Or something like
I was so confused. I was just like, what is going on? Why is she speaking to the fly? We later learn what happens there, but I had no clue what was happening at that point.
But she's got lunch ready. And she calls to the doctor in the other room and he says, you know, he's starving and he's kind of grumpy. So again, we hear Grumpy Zimmerman. As she's leaving, by the way, Barkley arrives and he's got a small little canister with him or something. He says, hey, tell Zimmerman I've got a surprise for him.
Yeah.
And he asks the computer, is the download complete? And the computer says, yes, it is. And you see this kind of flashing. So we think that the doctor's, you know, program has been downloaded into this little canister or something.
So what is that? What is that? What is he holding?
I have no,
is it a hard drive?
It's
about the size of a portable, of a modern day portable speaker is what it looks like. But
yeah, or it looks like a little thermos or something. Like,
is it a mobile? He doesn't have his mobile emitter. So is it
a hard drive of some kind?
No,
it's
what's
be.
My, what's my, what am I trying to say? What projects the doctor in sick bay when he's not using the mobile emitter?
The hollow emitters in sick bay.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's the mobile hollow emitter is what
maybe.
It is to enable his program to appear.
To move around.
Yeah, to move around. Exactly. Because remember, I took his thing off.
His portable hollow.
His mobile emitter, his futuristic mobile emitter was ripped off of his shirt. His uniform by me in Astrometrics or by Harry, excuse me.
Yeah, it could be a portable emitter.
That's
something.
What I'm thinking it was.
Yeah. Okay. We go in the lab though. Haley brings his lunch in. She says, Barkley's here.
Yeah. And Grumpy's he's still not happy because he doesn't want salad. He wants pork chops.
Pork chops. Yeah. But he does finally say, okay, send Barkley in. He's got 3 minutes. That's it.
Yeah.
Barkley comes in, activates the doctor, and he's he's able to be in the lab because there's hollow emitters on the wall of this lab. So somehow.
Oh, okay.
That's what I was guessing, is that there's hollow, right, because there's a hollow grid on the wall in this lab. So,
okay. Okay.
But I do want to say at this point, the doctor appears. You've got Bob playing the doctor. You got Bob playing Zimmerman. And there's a lot of tricky camera work in this sequence.
Oh my God.
Tons of it.
And this entire episode, not just the scene. So
yeah, this is the beginning of it, but they had to have used a motion control camera. So what that means is there's a camera support. The camera is put onto a like an arm or a dolly of some kind, dolly and an arm, that is computer controlled. So the motion can be repeated precisely over and over. Yeah. So they had to do that camera moves with Bob as Zimmerman. Then they had to go change him and have the camera repeat itself in motion control with Bob playing Bob. Right. And then you use split screen and put those pieces together. And now you've got Bob in a scene with himself. But the motion control cameras are very time consuming. Very, very time consuming. Oh, I've rarely used it in my career because it is so time consuming.
Yeah.
There's also photo doubles used in the scene for some of the cuts. There's green screen used. I cannot stress enough how time consuming these scenes probably were, and the precision. And even though they're not perfect, it was a really ambitious sequence for our show at the time. Absolutely.
Then you got to give props to Terry Wendell for at least that much, having to deal with all that. I have to say it was a gargantuan task.
It was. Right? It was.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But we do learn a few things in this scene. We learn that the original doctor, the EMH Mark I, is obsolete. It's no longer in use. And the doctor doesn't know this. And when he finds out, he's a little shocked. He thinks it's been retired. And of course, Zimmerman clues him in on it. He says, no, it wasn't retired. None of the EMH Mark I's were retired. They were reconfigured to scrub plasma conduits on waste transfer barges. So this is, they've basically turned all of what we know as the doctor into
janitors.
Malon, into Malon.
Yes.
The Malon, right? With the Malon waste people, so waste aliens. Mm-hmm. Scrubbing.
But the doctor keeps saying to Zimmerman, like, I've adapted. And I'm different. I'm not just a plain Mark One. I've learned a lot, and Zimmerman is not impressed. No,
Lewis is not even listening to that. He doesn't care.
Barclay says he's been running for 6 years continuously in the Delta Quadrant, seeing more things than most doctors will see in their lifetime.
Yeah.
And I love when the doctor says to Zimmerman at one point, he says, I've even adapted to deal with difficult patients like you or something. Yeah. Like that. And then yeah. Zimmerman's like, I didn't program you for sarcasm.
Right.
Like, so
right.
he's starting to see that this,
the
CMH has adapted a bit, but still
he's not,
not
buying it. He's not. Buying it. I mean, mm-hmm. he even exclaims to Barkley. He's like, you brought an EMH Mark One 30,000 light years to come treat me. Are you crazy? Like he doesn't, mm-hmm. you know, he thinks this is the most ridiculous thing in the world. Mm-hmm. And I love that Leonard, the holographic iguana, actually speaks in this scene. He says,
yes, he does.
Just being thorough is what he repeats.
Yeah. He repeats what the doctor line. Has yeah. just said.
Yeah. He goes, just being thorough.
Yeah, the doctor says, I'm just being thorough. And you hear, yeah. just being thorough. And then the doctor turns. We cut to the iguana.
Yeah.
And it turns out that that's a holographic iguana yeah. who can speak. And his name is Leonard.
Yeah.
And does, the doctor
doesn't
says.
Doesn't the doctor deactivate him? At this
deactivate.
Point? Yeah, it's like, geez. Like,
yeah.
What right do you have, doctor, to deactivate the pet?
He says, I'm a doctor, not a zookeeper.
Yeah.
He's got some funny lines in there. Doctor even asks Zimmerman, what was your first symptom? I think the Zimmerman says something like acute hair loss.
Yeah.
Very funny. So there's some good jokes in the scene.
There are. And the scene basically culminates or climaxes with this, you know, debate or argument between Zimmerman and the doctor about how the doctor has, you know, basically been in charge of his life. He has control. And Zimmerman says, oh, really? Let me show you who has the control. And he beams him out of, or he transfers his program.
Transfer EMH.
Yeah.
yeah.
He transfers the EMH from the lab to the living quarters area.
And there's Barkley and
yeah.
Haley
go?
Waiting. How did it go? The doctor's got a sour expression. Yeah. Funny looks. It's good.
Very funny.
And then we go to the space station shot again.
Yeah.
Again, cool yeah. space station design.
Yeah, it looks good.
Back to the living quarters.
Yeah.
Barkley and Haley are there. And right. The doctor's
gone in for a second try, clearly. All right. That's yeah. the understood scene that
yeah.
happened.
We didn't see that yet. This yeah. arguing has continued.
Yes.
Doctor storms into the living quarters. He's had it. He says, power up the Midas array. I want to go back to Voyager right now.
Barkley doesn't understand why. He's like, what happened? And he basically explains that he was doing a mitochondrial scan and the doctor noticed something unusual. And he just couldn't figure it out until he realized that his scan showed that Zimmerman was a Vulcan marsupial. So yeah. basically a Vulcan kangaroo is what it showed up as on his tricorder. So he yeah. realized that Zimmerman had reconfigured the doctor's tricorder and the doctor was just absolutely beside himself, just yes. not happy with what has happened. But Haley says it sounds like he's making progress because he only teases those that he likes.
Mm.
So there
I don't know about that. I think, yeah, but maybe.
That's what she says.
The fly buzzes by at this
yeah.
point.
Yeah.
And the doctor's looking at the fly. And Barkley says, oh, that's Roy, a holographic yeah. fly.
Well, no, he doesn't say it's a holographic fly. He just says it's Roy, commissioned by Starfleet Intelligence,
yeah.
an experiment in micro surveillance. So it may be instead of a actual holographic fly,
oh,
it might be a real yes. Like and said so basically.
Oh, it probably is real because
yeah,
because when the doctor's swinging yeah. the book at him, he grabs a book and mm-hmm. and he says, mm-hmm. "Well, Barkley has said Zimmerman kept this fly, Roy, for a pet.
As a pet, exactly.
So now the doctor's you know yeah. Swiping at the." At the fly around the mm-hmm. room, and Barkley's mm-hmm. trying to calm him down.
Yeah.
And the doctor says, you know, there's undercover insects in here talking iguanas.
Yeah.
And Zimmerman is deranged and needs a counselor.
He needs a counselor. But one important fact that we kind of glazed over is that Barkley kind of calms down the doctor and telling him, look, we cannot send you back. Remember, it's once a month. You have two more weeks here. That's yeah. it. You can't yeah. sit. We can't send you back right now. But yeah. yes, but on the line about that, he needs a counselor, and he does end up swatting the fly. And
he swats the fly, smashes the fly. It with a book.
Yeah,
and he says, "Finally, yeah. I've accomplished something."
Yeah, storms out.
Right. Yeah.
But we are now what I would say would be Barkley's quarters.
Yeah,
or maybe someplace some that he's
quarters.
Hanging out. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he is now communicating on his different
giant laptop.
It's a different style of giant laptop. Yeah. He's communicating with Deanna Troi and he is begging Deanna to come help with Zimmerman. She agrees that if she can convince Picard, Captain Picard to let her go. She will try to make it there by the beginning of next week. And Barclay is overjoyed. He's so happy about that. But nice transition from talking about needing a counselor to Barclay actually reaching out to a counselor. We have another exterior space shot of Voyager, and then we end up in the captain's ready room yet again.
We do with nice JC scene.
Moment there. Yeah,
there's a lot of flirting going on.
And
in
also,
scene.
She never sits on the other side. You know what I'm saying? No. There's a point where she kind of comes out from behind her desk and sits.
She goes and
on
sits
the
at
same
the guest
side
chair.
With Chakotay next to her honey. So she has just listened to this communique. From and no one ever refers to it as communique, do they? I mean, it was kind of odd. I was like, oh, yeah, it's a communique. She listened to a communique from Admiral Hayes, and he is very curious. He wants to know everything. He wants to know the information about all the casualties that Voyager has suffered. He wants to know about the Maquis, and he wants to know about this. But this sort of a this makes gives Janeway
when he brings
a little
up
pause.
The Maquis. Yeah. How's the what's the status of the Maquis crew members that you've taken prisoner?
Right.
Is the implication.
Yes.
And she pauses it and she's like, she doesn't think of him as Maquis anymore.
No.
She thinks of them all as
part of her crew. She didn't say Starfleet, but she says members of my crew. So that's it. But she's concerned. She doesn't know how to answer Hayes, and she wants Chakotay to help. So she actually invites him on a lunch date. She says, will you want to go to lunch with me and help me write this? And Chakotay is very chill. He's like, listen, you know what? We will cross that bridge when that bridge appears, basically. I'm not going to, we don't need to tell him anything extra, this or that. We can, we can work through this. So it'll be all right. And it was a good, nice scene between the two of them.
Decide to have a lunch date in a very flirty way.
Yeah.
Invites him to lunch, and
it was
like,
flirty.
He says, "You're on," with a smile. I was like,
What are you serving for lunch, Captain? A little slice of nookie? I don't know. Okay,
but they talk about lunch. We go back to the space station. Haley's making lunch again for Zimmerman. He eats very healthy, by the way. Lots of salads. Clearly.
He does.
And you hear him moaning as she's preparing lunch over the comm. You're like, give me a few minutes. And I thought he was sick at first.
Oh, you thought he actually threw up?
I was like, I thought, he's having a tough day. And then you cut in the lab.
Yeah.
Cut inside and you see, no, he's getting a massage from some crazy alien with a wig and all these like tubules or something, tendrils going around her head. But while he's getting the massage and talking about the doctor harassing him, you see this alien masseuse kind of using one hand for a massage and the other hand pulls out a tricorder.
Yeah,
a medical tricorder and starts scanning him. And he notices, he looks over his shoulder and sees the tricorder. He jumps up. He's like, what are you doing? He realizes that maybe this isn't a legit masseuse.
Yes.
And he orders the computer to realign Voyager's EMH, I guess, projection or something. The alien turns into a sort of sheepish doctor at the moment.
Yeah.
Zimmerman is furious. Big screaming scene here, by the way.
It is a big screaming scene, but this is also the scene which kind of, it starts... My problem with this episode is that the doctor has scanned Zimmerman multiple times, but yet you keep seeing scenes of him trying to scan him again. It's like, wait, our tricorders are pretty darn advanced. It doesn't really take, it's not something that it takes 45 minutes to scan somebody. The minute you hit scan, they're scanned. So he's already been scanned at this point. This is his third time being scanned. So
at
to
least.
Me, this is the hole in the plot. It's sort of like, guys, come on. I mean, he's already been scanned. You're actually adding this scene in because of the humor element of the hey, here's a masseuse, the doctor is posing as, and he's trying to scan him as the masseuse. Ha 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 ha. And it just, to me, it pulled me out a little bit. It bugged me.
Yeah. So. It did feel a little repetitive.
Yes.
The scanning for unnecessarily.
Oh God. But
they do have a screaming scene.
The screaming match. Yeah. But you know what? This is not the loudest that Bob Picardo has screamed. No. So I was happy that he didn't go to the highest level of screaming. The Tom Paris level of screaming from Alice when you were screaming there. Remember that?
Yeah, that was some good screaming.
That was good. Yeah.
That was some good screaming. Mm-hmm. They do talk about, you know, they argue about how the doctor's trying to convince him that he's grown and evolved and is able to help. And I think Zimmerman at one point says, oh, so you can sing and dance now. I should install you at a Ferengi nightclub. So he's, you know, they're throwing in these insults and barbs and sarcasms. Then he gets a call from Haley again that there's a visitor there, and Deanna Troi enters the lab.
Yeah, she comes in. She doesn't know which ones. She doesn't know which one to treat. Actually, when she comes in, she's like,
And again, another motion control shot. Deanna Troi walking in, and in the middle of the two of them had to have taken hours just for that one shot.
Yeah, I think I read on Memory Alpha that someone interviewed Marina about her her acting on this specific episode. And she said that it was a joy to work with Bob Picardo. He was so easy to work with. But all the, you know, in dealing with the camera and dealing with the two Bobs, that she had a hard time dealing with that. Like she said, I have to stay perfectly still. I couldn't move an inch, you know, at this point and that point. So there was a lot of technical stuff.
Technical challenges.
That Marina was not happy to have to partake in.
I'm sure it was tricky.
Yeah.
But she comes in. Zimmerman goes over. He thinks she's a trick, like another hologram. So he pinches her, and she's like, "Ow, I'm real."
Yeah.
The doctor's very glad to see her. Zimmerman is not. He's still grumpy. No. The doctor tries to explain to the counselor that, you know, he's turned paranoid and agoraphobic, and he's just losing his mind. He's going crazy. Right. And then the counselor, Troi, she tries to get first the doctor to see Zimmerman's point of view. She says, well, to him, you're obsolete. Like, would you imagine letting a surgeon from 100 years ago work on your program?
Yeah,
and he's like, sure, if he knew what he was doing. She's like, really?
Really?
From 100 years ago? And he's like, okay, maybe I get it. And then she goes to Zimmerman and she's like, look at the doctor's position if things were reversed.
So she's slowly just sowing the seeds.
Getting them to see each other's.
Yeah, just look at this for what it is, okay?
But she does get them to see each other's point a little bit, but then...
Well, he still cuts into him because he says, thank you, counselor, for extending the olive branch. I'm willing to see past our differences if he is. And Zimmerman's like, all right, yep, I am too. And he can start by purging the plasma conduits in deck 6.
Exactly.
So he's still sticking it to him. Yeah, another barb.
Go clean the plasma conduits if he wants to be helpful. And the doctor gets angry again. They start to bicker. Troi is like, that's it. You're both jerks.
Yeah.
And storms out. And then the iguana goes, jerks.
Does he? Oh, he does. That's
the
right.
The iguana goes,
jerks.
Yeah. There's a nice button. You think she's getting somewhere. And then they just go back to bickering. And the iguana calls it.
I almost want you to text Bob and say, whose idea was the iguana, Bob? Tell me now. All right, so we are now in Zimmerman's living quarters.
Somebody's living quarters. Probably.
Yeah.
And Troi is telling Barkley that, you know what, maybe I shouldn't have even come here. Like, these two can't even be in the same room with each other. They're jerks. Mm-hmm. She goes on to say, like, you know, Zimmerman is hiding in the lab. He won't come out. And the doctor is on the holodeck, and he won't come out of there. They're not even speaking to each other. And Barkley says, well, I let the doctor use my Voyager simulation. It seems to be comforting him. So he's, you know, they're in this standoff and Barkley and Troi can't figure out what to do. Haley brings in some ice cream for Troi to try to comfort her.
Yes.
And then Troi, Troi realizes here, she says,
you're a hologram.
You're a hologram, aren't you? And, and Haley's like, how'd you know? And she says, well, I haven't been around. I've been around you a bunch. I haven't sensed any emotions. I'm an empath. Right. We learn that Haley has been there 9 years and she's older than even the doctor.
The EMH Mark One. Yeah. So she was around when the EMH Mark One was designed, basically. Mm-hmm. So Troi does a little, you know, a little digging here with Haley and just wanted to know, you know, why did Lewis make the EMH Mark I in his own image. And Halo's like, well, maybe you should ask him. And Troy's like, I already did, but he evaded that question. I was hoping you would shed some light in this situation. Haley does give us some information. She tells us that Zimmerman was very, very proud of the Mark I.
Mm-hmm.
And he would dream about having hundreds of holograms in the corner of every quadrant saving lives. And he put so much of himself into its development. He felt that it was only natural that the EMH Mark I should look like him as well.
He was very proud to reveal this to Starfleet, and then Starfleet didn't
meet their expectations. They didn't
meet their expectations, and so Starfleet ordered the Mark I to be reconfigured to clean the plasma conduits.
Well, it didn't go right to that. I mean, they said, "Hey, listen, Zimmerman, the Mark I failed to meet our expectations." And he spent 2 years trying to fix the defects. Like he just locked himself away, trying to fix everything. And he finally just gave up and he started from scratch. Whole new matrix. And that was the Mark II, which was then followed by 3, 4. And
but none of those other newer models were modeled after him. The only one that's because he was ashamed of the failure. He didn't want to model the new ones after him. So the only ones that look like him are the Mark I's.
Yeah. And so Troy kind of has this realization at the end. She says to Haley, oh, so after all this time, the Mark I shows up. It must be like staring in a mirror at a reflection that you do not want to remember. So great line there. I love that line.
And when she has this realization, that's when she can eat her ice cream at the very end of the scene. She's like, aha, I've gotten somewhere. I figured something out.
I'm going to reward myself with ice cream. Yummy. Okay.
We go to the lab again, and Zimmerman, this is a sad little scene.
It is. He's recording his will. It's like
he's recording his will. He thinks he's dying here, and he wants to leave the Trojan Horse project to Barclay.
Right.
He wants to leave all of his holographic art to Barclay too. So clearly
the only one Barclay that can appreciate them is Barclay. Yeah.
Yeah. And he wants Haley to be running as long as his lab exists.
Yeah.
Because he says she's as real to me as anyone
he's ever known. Yeah.
It's very sad.
It is.
He says something like, I feel like, you know, I don't have any other friends because all my friends are, I created all my friends. I created Haley. I created other than Barclay and Haley. Yeah. That's it.
And then his illness flares up and he experiences a very sharp pain. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He pauses his recording. When he's buckled over, he does kind of look up and he sees Leonard the iguana. And he even says to Leonard, look, don't worry, I'll find a place for you too. So it is sad. I mean, this is
sad scene.
Yeah, very much so.
We see the space station again, back to, I guess we're in the holodeck with the doctor.
The holodeck of it's Voyager's sick bay basically going on. Yeah.
And the doctor's there because it's comforting him to be on Voyager. And Troy enters and she comments about this recreation that Barclay made. And
Well, she's never seen Voyager ever.
Yeah.
So.
She's like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
Doctor says, yeah, Barclay got most of it right, except that Neelix does not purr. And she says, oh, well, that's probably because he named his cat, favorite cat, Neelix. So he probably added the purring just for his cat. But she says, hey, why don't you join me for dinner? And he goes, I'm a hologram. I don't eat. I don't need to eat dinner. And she says, well, you know, it's going to be a nice dinner to get to know each other. Barclay will be there, Haley and
Doc Zimmerman.
Goes, nope, I'm not doing it. And then suddenly he starts to fritz. Troy calls to Barclay, what's going on? Barclay says, well, he was running diagnostics on the doctor. But his program was sent 30,000 light years. It's starting to break down, starting to destabilize.
Right. And that's actually we're in the living quarters at this point, right?
Yeah, so living quarters where Barclay.
Yeah, Barclay says your program is destabilizing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Barclay basically says there's nothing I can do. Pretty soon, very soon, he's going to be destroyed.
Yeah, I mean, this is the end of the doctor. So now the doctor has a death sentence in a way. Mm-hmm. So both Zimmerman and the doctor are now dying. Mm-hmm.
We go to the lab next and Barclay is explaining to Zimmerman that the doctor is dying. And Zimmerman's like,
he says, good
files
riddance
are degrading.
Good riddance to bad photons is what he says.
but Barclay's like, Voyager can't do without him.
Yeah, there are people that count on him on Voyager.
People that count on him.
Yeah, we have to send them back. And Zimran's like, we'll send them a Mark IV. They're more reliable. Yeah. And then Barclay's like, they don't want a Mark IV. They want their friend, which is another good piece of dialogue right there.
Yeah. And Zimmerman says, he goes, you know, these EMHs were not designed to be anybody's friend. Like, these are.
They're just a hologram.
It's just a hologram. And it's a bad hologram. And like, he's ashamed of it.
Yeah. Haley pipes up.
Haley pipes up. She's hurt.
Yeah.
And she says, is that how you feel about me? I'm just a hologram. And he's like, oh, I'm being ambushed in my own lab.
Yeah.
And then Haley tells him a story about when he was on Vulcan.
That he canceled a lecture and came all the way home to repair her.
Because she was destabilizing.
Yes.
And he says, well, I was just looking for a reason to get out of there. I didn't want to give the lecture anyway.
Yeah, right.
And she's like, no, you came back because of me. You cared about me.
Yeah.
Just like you care about the Mark One.
He just won't admit it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Haley says, you know, he may not be perfect. The Mark One may not be perfect, but he is one of your creations and he needs you right now. He's gonna die too.
Yeah. Don't turn your back on him.
Yeah. Time has passed. Now we're still in the lab.
Yeah.
Zimmerman's eating a salad. He activates the doctor.
Yeah. He activates the EMH. The EMH frisses in and says, please state the nature of the medical emergency.
And Zimmerman says, you're the emergency. And doctor's like, wait, you're going to repair me? You're going to fix me? And he asks, you know, well, how are you going to do it? What are you doing? And he's like, is that a fractal algorithm? And he goes, no, don't do that. They're notoriously unstable. And then Zimmerman says something like, whoops.
He goes, in the hands of a novice. And then he goes, beep, 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 beep. He goes, whoops. He's like, whoops.
Doctor's like, whoops? What's whoops? And Zimmerman just shuts him up.
Yeah.
He doesn't want any patient questions here.
Jabbing in his ear when he's doing his very detailed handiwork there. Yeah.
We come back, a little time has passed. He reactivates the doctor. Yeah. And the doctor at first he goes, I can't move. Yeah, What's going on?
He's pretty stressed.
Zimmerman says, I took your mobility algorithms offline. I'm making improvements. And this is the way that I always wanted the Mark One EMH to be. I just never had the chance to. And he reactivates him again. So he fritzes back in by the hollow grid.
And he has a new message.
He has a new opening line. Instead of
Can I say it? He says, welcome to sickbay. How may I help you today? So it's completely different.
What am I saying?
Yes.
And he says, yeah, I've tried to upgrade your algorithms to make you a little more friendly, less grumpy.
He says, I've added new subroutines for compassion, patience, empathy, decorum, all these things. And the doc says, I don't feel anything as well because I haven't installed them yet. But I just thought you'd like to be awake for the big moment.
But he does acknowledge in this scene, he does agree with Barclay that the doctor has exceeded his expectations and he's accomplished much more than he ever thought.
Some of his programming, exactly. Yeah.
He also does say something like, you know, you have exceeded your programming, but you never overcame your inherent flaws, your arrogance, your irritable. He says, a jerk.
As Counselor Troy would say, yes. But then he throws it back. Bob, as the EMH, says, I believe she was describing you as well. So there's a little bit of like, look, we are the same people, basically.
And so at this point, the doctor says, you know what? I like myself the way I am. I don't want these upgrades and changes. And Zimmerman says, I'm trying to do you a favor. And doctor's like, I don't want any favors from your new subroutines. And he says, why can't you just accept me the way I am? And Zimmerman responds, because you're defective.
Yeah. And he gives other acronyms. So instead of emergency medical hologram, he says emergency medical hotheads, extremely marginal house calls, which is a very funny one.
Yeah, very funny.
And that's what everyone used to call the Mark One. And that's when, you know, the Mark One was reconfigured after 2 years of him trying to fix it. Couldn't fix it.
He basically admits what Haley said. He said, you know, I was humiliated.
Yeah.
With
675
Mark Ones out there.
Rubbing and plasma conduits.
Yeah. All with my face.
Yeah.
So he's humiliated.
Yeah.
And the doctor says, well, they're probably doing a good job. So they start now. They're starting to understand each other. And the doctor is empathetic. And he says, they're probably doing a good job. scans Zimmerman. He wants Zimmerman to be proud of him.
Yeah, just give him a chance and be proud of him. Mm-hmm. Exactly. The doctor then tells Zimmerman that his intercellular proteins are at a dangerous level and mm-hmm. they should begin the procedure immediately. Mm-hmm. And he says, please, just give me this chance to make you proud of me. So this is the turning point.
Yeah, this is the turning point. Zimmerman says, okay, we can try it. Don't expect me to put you in my will.
My will, yeah. Which is he still has a bar, but even though it's like, oh my goodness. Classic, exactly.
We go to the living quarters. Barclay's pacing. We learn it's been over 32 hours. The doctor's been doing this procedure. And finally, the doctor.
That's a long time.
A long
32
time.
Hours.
Yeah.
So that's one day and another 8 hours, a quarter. Yeah. Is that right? Yeah, a third. A day and a third of a day. To do this. My goodness.
Yeah. The doctor comes in and says that the procedure was successful, basically. Mm. He's got a few questions, though, about his degradation. He said, apparently, this was started intentionally. He's like, what were you guys doing? And
he found an algorithm designed to disrupt his matrix. And So Troy,
they were trying to set him up so that Zimmerman would have some empathy and the doctor gets it now.
Yeah.
And so he's relieved that he's not going to be, degraded and die, and Zimmerman's fixed. And
Zimmerman does need more procedures, though. He requires several more treatments, but he will, in his opinion, make a full recovery. Mm-hmm. So that's very positive and good news.
We go to the lab for our final scene here, and the doctor is taking photos with his giant camera. And Zimmerman walks in and he's like, what are you doing? And doctor says, well, photography is one of my hobbies that I developed. So we see that they're really kind of getting to know each other. Yeah. And the doctor says, you've got a rest. And Zimmerman says, well, I hope you're not going to be coming back here to do more of this. And the doctor says, oh no, I am not going to be able to come back. The captain would not allow me to come back. This is it.
Yeah.
So this is really their goodbye.
It is. But then Zimmerman does say, well, that's fine. But the next time she sends a data stream, you might want to drop me a line and let me know how you're doing. So
exactly.
This is progress. This is huge progress. He actually does care about the EMH Mark I. And of course, the EMH says, well, if you insist. And then Barclay enters the room.
Yeah.
And EMH asks Barclay if he could help him take a photo, and he actually poses with his father, Zimmerman, and they snap that photo.
It's a cool shot, the two, the Bob with the hand over his shoulder.
Yes.
It's a tricky shot to do, but it was very well done.
Was that a photo double that was standing?
No, that had to have been a locked off camera.
A locked off camera move. Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Yep.
But we've got that freeze frame at the end, and there's the photo of Bob and Bob. And it's sweet.
Yeah. And then that goes to credits, and that's the end of that one.
That is the end of our doctor's father story. Mm-hmm. The father son story.
That is
my lesson for this episode is to be careful of assumptions, because assumptions can usually lead to disappointment. That's what I took from this, is like, the doctor came here thinking he's going to have this fantasy reunion, and he was disappointed. Instead of just taking people for who they are and learning to see the potential rather than being stuck with your preconceived judgments, that both of them had certain assumptions or judgments. And so that's why there was so much conflict. Instead of Zimmerman saying, hey, maybe you're not the failed Mark I, maybe you're different. And instead of the doctor thinking, oh, he's got to be my father knows best, instead of, oh, well, he might be a grumpy guy and that's okay. Like, these assumptions lead to disappointment and judgments, preconceived judgments. So that was my lesson. What about you?
Similar to yours, my lesson from this episode is to remember to remain flexible.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times you have a preconceived notion about something before you go into it.
Yeah.
And if you hold fast to that, and never, never change course, Mm-hmm. You could be in for a lot of misery because the bottom line is you never know. Any situation that you think is going to be a certain way, there's always a little bit of a twist, a little plot twist, a little change in something. And so when you do come into some type of discussion, meeting, conference, whatever it may be, with your preconceived notion of how it's going to go, and the minute it starts going sideways, you must adjust. You must be flexible. Mm-hmm. And you must realize, okay, it's not working. We have to find another tactic or another angle to approach this to make sure that this thing can move forward. And you can't move forward when you're just spinning your tires because you're doing the same damn thing. It's
You're stuck in that judgment, that preconceived notion.
Is it Sisyphus? The guy, he rolls the rock up the hill and then it rolls all the way back down. He does the same thing over and over again. He doesn't change it, right?
Yeah.
So So that's my takeaway. So similar to yours.
Yeah.
My rating... Number one, because of the incessant use of the scanning of the tricorder over and over again, which pulled me out. And also because there wasn't your criteria, which is the usage of all of the main characters. I don't even think Tuvok even said anything in this episode. So I you know, for me, I'm going to give it a lower rating because of that. And, you know, I'm sure there's people... that the Doctor is their favorite character in Voyager, and this is their dream episode because not only you get the Doctor, you get the Doctor times two. I mean, so if you're ever, if you are a obsessive Doctor fan, this is your episode. Mm-hmm. But for me, because of that criteria, I'm going to give this a 6.5.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fair. I'll be honest. This is one of my least favorite episodes.
Of the entire series
Of our series. I think the story was repetitive. Ultimately, I don't, you know, I think there was a very simple message in it. And I think it lacked involvement of our crew. Mm-hmm. It lacked any kind of B story or C story. Often we have, you know, our A story and then a smaller story or two that sort of counterpoint and echo the same themes and, you know, open it up from a different perspective, the same ideas. This had none of that.
Right.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So I just lacked a lot of things. I give it a five.
That's actually not your lowest rating. You've gone lower than that.
Oh, well, it's one of
you
my
gave
least
a four
favorite.
Or something. So
did I?
Yeah, you did.
This is a five. I'm going to give it a five.
Okay.
I think that the whole idea of the theme, these preconceived notions or disappointment or fantasies of what could be or misunderstandings. There were so many opportunities to open this story up to other characters.
Yeah.
Like the Maquis scene with Janeway and Chakotay. That could have been a B story. Like, you know, the assumptions that the Maquis, you know, that Starfleet is making about the Maquis relationship on our ship. It's an assumption. It's not really, you know, things have changed, but yet that story was not explored. None of the characters' hopes, dreams of messages back were explored in any way. Yeah. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm going to give it a five.
I will. And before you read the rating, I the entire time you're talking, I keep thinking, man, if they invent a time machine and the year 2000 era, John Bruno and Bob Picardo come to our time and listen to this podcast, they would then change the script. They would say, oh, we need to rework this. So,
I don't know that Bob and John Bruno's story pitch was the flaw, because I think their story pitch is what got made. I think the writers as a team, the writing room and everyone, should have looked at what could have made it better. Mm. And they could have improved. Like, I think that there's a lot of ways that this story had value, but could have been improved a lot. And
so then the players that ended up doing the teleplay, those are the
I think they could have, that could they have could have opened it up and, and made this a more, you know, thorough exploration of this story rather than felt pretty limited and a little redundant.
And also restricted to the 42-minute time constraint as well. So it's not all the writer's fault.
I'm dying to see what our average rating is here because it's one of my lowest scores. So Our admirals and captains' average rating for Lifeline is
7.4.
7.6.
Oh, I was close. I was close. My guess is close. I'm going to do that from now on. Right before you say it, I'm going to guess what I think they're going to say. So then we'll have it there.
7.6. Wow. Yeah.
A lot of Doctor fans out there.
And I'm a Doctor fan too.
Well, no, who isn't a Doctor fan? I mean, that's definitely one of the most popular characters on Voyager, definitely. Yeah. But we do have validity when it comes to our points that we made. I think they're valid points.
Yeah.
They really are.
Agreed.
Yeah. I mean, to have a series regular, do you agree with me? Did Tuvok say anything in this entire show?
He didn't have a single line.
Okay, I'm sorry. How can you not?
B'Elanna may have had one line. Yeah, Neelix may have had a couple of lines. Like, there wasn't a story for anybody.
No. Did you talk? Did you speak? You spoke a little bit, right? Or did you?
I don't know. Holy crap.
You may not have even said anything. So, again, you cannot have your main character say Zippo the entire episode. There has to be something there, right?
Agreed.
Okay.
Agreed.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning in. And please don't get mad at us for giving it such a low rating. I know there are fans out there. This is their favorite episode. There's always – every episode of Voyager has some – number of fans that love that episode, and I'm sure this is one of those episodes for some of the diehard Doctor fans out there. But Robbie and I, we have spoken.
To each his own, right? Everybody's gonna have their own experience.
So. Yes. Okay.
Well, that was good. What's next week?
Yes, next week is The Haunting of Deck 12. We're getting very close to rounding out the end of season 6 at this point. Okay. So it'll be The Haunting of Deck 12, one other episode, and that'll be it. So season 6 is almost done. I can't believe it.
Unbelievable.
This is so crazy. We've been doing this since March of 20. Well, we launched on May of 20, but we started recording in March of 2020. So this is incredible that we've come this far. It really is. And thank you everyone for tuning in and joining us on this journey for over 2 years now. It's been an incredible journey for both Robbie, myself, Megan and Rebecca, and of course for all the fans as well that have tuned in. So thank you so much. And tune in next week when we will be reviewing, recapping, and discussing The Haunting of Deck 12. For all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.